Guys, welcome back, or welcome to
the first but not really episode of That's a Bit.
Yeah, we think we're going to be renaming formerly She Does Stand Up 2 to That's a Bit. Let us know if you think that is good. We think it's great.
I think it's pretty nice.
I think it's really good, but I don't. But I also lack self-confidence.
Yeah.
So you let us know.
I need a direct validation for everything I do.
Yeah. That's why we do bits.
Yeah, that's why we do bits.
Like this one right now.
Like this one right now. I just want to plug my dates real quick. I got dates coming up in Austin, Fort Worth, and Chicago.
We need to start having you read them because it's funny watching you have a little aneurysm trying to remember where you're flying to. You can see me quite often in New York City. Could be more. Book me. Could be more. And I'm also doing a couple things on the road. Most importantly, I'm doing the Don't Tell in Delaware.
Oh, cool.
So if you're in Delaware, come hang. This
I have three states left. Delaware is one of them. You get to perform in Delaware before me.
Can't wait.
I don't think Delaware is real.
We'll find out this weekend.
Oh, also sign up for my email list. Email list is on my website. That's really great because I'll let you know when I'm coming to your city, and I'll also let you know when I'm dropping my special that I just filmed. It's going to be really, really great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
We'll do a whole episode.
I can't believe we're releasing this before we talk about the special because it was absolutely amazing. Guys, stay fucking tuned. But today we are not talking about the special. We are talking to a dear, dear friend.
Dear friend.
Amazing, I'll call him artist. He just goes beyond comic.
Rapper?
He's not a rapper.
Director?
Not that I'm aware
designer.
Of.
Designer? No. Danny
None
Jollis
of those things.
Is one of my absolute best friends in comedy. He's one of my favorite comedians. He is a brilliant actor. You can see him on TED, the series, Crazy Ex, Rami, a lot of stuff. He always steals the scene. He's been on Colbert. He's been on Comedy Central. He has two specials on YouTube that are brilliant, that are just so different and so funny. And if you get a chance to see him live, he is one of the best live performers you can ever witness. He's great. Great story. Talked a lot about sports and coming up in New York from acting to LA open mics.
We also talked about breaks, and one of my favorite parts was we talk about bad breaks, like bad things that happen in your
getting
career.
Getting close, which he's the king of.
Yeah. And so missing. It's a really good one. It's inspiring. I hope you guys like it. And yeah.
Danny Jollis.
It's this clip where I'm talking about bros. And I was like, you know, I think bros have done so much self-reflection that they're no longer like the creepiest of guys. And I actually think like nice guys kind of are because they haven't done any reflection. Bros have been through so much scrutiny that they're like just kind of like they're the ones now who I feel like are much more aware of like.
I fully agree with this.
Yes.
I 100% agree with this.
I think it's really shifted. And then this guy, the guy running the tech was like, how do we define a bro? And I was like, the way you said it. And then everybody laughed. And I was like, good clip. I was like, that's a good clip. Like,
you'd be surprised, but I have some strong opinions on this same subject.
Well,
about bros.
Bros have been told they're bad for so long.
By so long, you mean like 7 years. But
wait, more than that. Like,
I feel like when I was in college, it was turning.
30?
Yeah.
No. I would say right as I was coming out of college, I became a punchline. And it caught me off guard.
But I would say even back in the day, maybe bro was jock before.
Jock.
And it was like
Abercrombie,
jocks,
yeah.
Cheerleaders versus the nerds. And I feel like that was a big thing in media where it was like the nerds make their comeback, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there were the celebrated bros too.
And I think as society and around, for me it was around Nerdist and Meltdown where I was like, oh, these nerds are some real bullies.
Oh, yeah.
These people who never got, I mean, the fallacy, I was like trying to write a premise today that was like, just a friendly reminder, anyone who has more than you is a bad person. And anyone who has less than you is a good person.
Uh-huh.
That kind of fallacy.
Yes.
Where like, there are Matt Damons and Paul Rudds in this world who have had a good life and aren't pieces of shit.
Uh-huh.
And there are people who've been through bad things who are still bad people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not totally based on your experience and your status.
There are no absolutes to anything that is ever said. But with that said, like, yes, the bro shift has been fascinating, and I think it's very real, and I think it is a thing that people don't like to admit because it's become so easy fun to shit on the bros.
A strong opening for me to talk about my own favorite subject, Travis Kelce.
Get my favorite subjects.
I think I have four or five podcasts in a row now that I've discussed
really?
This guy.
Oh, do you not like it talking about him, or you
no,
do
I
like
love
it?
Him.
Oh, okay,
I
great.
Love him, and I think that he's a strong example of one of those guys where it's like this guy is like the jockiest, broiest, couldn't be more bro.
100%.
And she's like, you know, doing this podcast in which he's a very thoughtful guy. He's like openly obsessed with his girlfriend, like always trying to bring her up and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. He's a good guy.
He's a good.
As far as we know.
I'll update any statement based on future knowledge. Yes. But based on this moment, but both Kelsey's, for sports fans, the Kelsey's have been known for much longer. So it's like, right. I feel like everyone's discovering up two people who I've been obsessed with for quite some time. Because for a long time, I've been like, these two are really funny.
Oh, yeah.
The Kelsey's are really funny. Right. I didn't realize how genuine they were, but like, Jason Kelsey's always been the funniest dude. And then Travis is, first off, generational talent at his position.
Yes.
Like,
from what I don't watch sports, but it seems that way.
Generational talent. Like, I think that's one thing people don't realize. It's like, he isn't just good.
Yeah.
He's like, revolutionized that position.
That's like a Patrick Mahomes. Yes. I was talking about him on a podcast, and I was like, I think he's good. I don't know if he's like Hall of Fame good. Turns out he is.
He's past Hall of Fame good.
Yeah. Turns out he's like a legendary talent.
He's looking at Mount Rushmore right now. Of course.
I was like, oh, he's this quarterback. Really? I'm sure he's great. I mean, he went to the Super Bowl.
Yes, he's 20. I mean, he's 28 now, but he's already won 3 Super Bowls.
Only 5 people have done that.
Oh, here we go.
Quarterbacks,
yes.
Maybe. That sounds right.
It does seem like Tom Brady. I don't pay attention to football, and I like obviously stan Michael Phelps like super hardcore when anyone tries to be like, well, it was just like, no, he's the best Olympic athlete of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady like seems to be that good with football. Like he's
absolutely
Jordan levels.
Yes.
But we just kind of don't like him. There's a bro we don't like because deep down he's a nerd.
Do I like him?
We can't tell what he is.
I don't like him as much as the Kelsey's.
Minus the kissing of the sun. Uh-huh. He's never really had a bad moment. I don't think he's a good guy. I don't think there's like amazing things about
him. He's got Mitt Romney to me, where it's like, where are the I need some skeletons.
Well, I think you want to know my conspiracy theory on Tom Brady? So him and Giselle did this big thing with FTX. Remember FTX?
Uh-huh.
And big ad campaign, and so much so that they were like involved with the company. I think she was given some like fake title there.
This is a crypto exchange that went down in flames.
That went down. Was massive. Massive fraud. We know. SBF, the whole deal. Swiftly thereafter, they filed for divorce. And my theory is that they were trying to remove assets, split assets off so that when...
Limit
the liability from FTX going down because they had been big spokespeople for it.
Let me say this. I don't know nothing about nothing.
I'm pretty sure I'm right.
You
pretty
could
sure
be
right.
Off mic. I will tell you, I've heard some behind the scenes details about the split.
Maybe both could be true. I want to be right.
I like that as a theory, and that's I think there could have been a potential like
that. It was like a convenient,
final straw, definitely. But there, I do know. I will say there are rumors of an event that occurred.
Wouldn't it be cute if we got divorced for some giant scandal?
I could not. There's no Xanax.
That'd be kind of romantic.
In the world that would be able to.
No, but I'll take all of it.
Can you imagine going through a public scandal?
No. No.
Seems like a nightmare.
I've now had a couple friends deal with it.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
They don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not chill.
I'll name names. Hassan and like we were around Norman some stuff went awry, and it's the one thing that's crazy now when I look at news scandals. No one knows the full story. If you think you know the full story, you're about 30% there at best. Yes.
And meanwhile, there's somebody on the other end who knows 100% of the story, who you're all yelling at, who's like just dealing with, okay, how do I say the other 70% without coming off defensive, without coming off, or the other 70% is going to confirm and potentially double the thing. And then you see them being like, how do I like... What I mean, it's just tough to watch someone go through it. Even if they are in the wrong, you're still like, God,
right.
You're a human being and the world is yelling at you. And it can, due to social media, like even Norman's, which was like, I think a smaller baby one.
Yeah.
It's still, I imagine from him, felt like for 2 days the world was yelling at him.
Oh, Jeff Dye. Jeff Dye is going through some shit right now and he was telling me about it personally. Jeff, you're listening. I'm about to blow up your spot. Sorry. But he had a term for it that he got from like one of the people at whatever TMZ. You're inside the bell. you're inside a giant ringing bell, and it sounds like that's the only thing happening in the world. If you're standing outside the bell, it's loud, but it's not deafening.
That's so true.
So that's
really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
TMZ. Very good with words.
Hey, someone at TMZ, leave TMZ. You're better than that.
Go to a poetry open mic.
Yeah, you got
literally,
something.
And literally anything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, literally use your skill set for anything but what you're doing.
It does kill me that the Kelsey brothers are funny. I was saying earlier, you know, don't be jealous. Like, don't think someone's a bad person just because they have more than you, but those guys are also funny.
Oh, hurts it's a little infuriating.
Bit. Yeah.
Them, I mean, Pat McAfee, I've been a fan of for years. I'm always like, he's one of the funniest people on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And he's a fucking former punter. And I'm like, he's funnier than 90% of comics. And he even did a kind of stand-up special at one point, and it was phenomenal. It was really good because he just story-told. He didn't try to do stand-up. He just story-told it, which is the way to do it. And he just talked, and it was like genuinely entertaining.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, God, I hate damn that. It. He's really... I mean, I've been a McAfee truther for years, and I'll remain forever.
So, Danny, I'm sorry. You're talking a lot about sports. So you must be some kind of, like, former athlete. Did you grow up a jock? What's your
Well, Matthew, your sarcasm means nothing to me. I did play basketball. I was pretty good. I did also play a little soccer, a little baseball. I'm so sneaky athletic, I've been told. Mm-hmm. The problem was I was so short. Mm-hmm. That I had my athletic dreams died so much faster than most kids. I was under 5 foot going in high school.
Ooh. Oh, that is tough.
So it was like very early. I was like, this is in a way that most kids, like, it's probably halfway through high school when you're like, God, the first time you go against like a true professional athlete, this really doesn't apply for you. But for the first time you go against like someone who is on the path to being a professional athlete, you're like, oh, it's different.
Yeah.
And I'll never be able to touch that. And I had that happen at like seventh grade. I was like, just off height, I'm never going to be able to compete.
Yeah.
In really any sport.
Laura went to nationals at 11.
Right. U.S. Open, not nationals.
Okay.
It's one step below.
But still, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you have.
And was
you
over 5 foot at that point?
I was. Yes. By a lot.
I'm sure.
By
most kids are. A lot of kids are at that point, and I certainly wasn't.
I was almost this size at that point.
That's wild.
Yeah. It was weird as hell.
I'm sure.
I tried to do stand-up about it, but I don't think people fully grasp like how fucking weird.
I think it's a good world because there are people I know who are like had that where it was like
you're an adult where as it's a like child.
Yes, there's something about like height first growth of like before your brain grew, your height just went. So it's like you're walking around as like kind of like at height of adult, and you're a child. But you were huge.
I was enormous. I literally, at one point, I went to, I was at like school fire drill or something like that. We were outside. And one of the teachers came up to me and tapped me on the back asking where my class was. Which I was like, I'm in fifth grade.
Yeah.
That's also, so crazy. We're wearing uniforms.
Yeah.
Stupid idiot.
I was the third shortest person in seventh grade.
Really?
Yeah. And I still feel like I have the chip on my shoulder from like being one of the smaller people.
I'll carry that chip forever, but I'm still pretty short.
Yeah.
So I still kind of hold that chip, but yes. So my sports career died.
I think you and I have this dynamic where we're inverted vessels.
Yes.
Yes. You're the charming salesman, sports enthusiast, and I failed at sports and don't. Yeah. And I have the
He's
more.
Trying to soften this on the fly.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
I'm like, let him struggle.
I have
keep him cooking.
Poor interpersonal skills.
Disgusting looking monster of a man that your body's in. Yeah, describe my body.
I just terms of just what you.
Sometimes
you got the Justin Long, I'm a Mac kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's good. Well done.
Yeah. If one of us was to
you cite, put yourself in a tough spot there,
yeah,
and you got yourself out of it.
I
get to edit this and make myself sound good.
He will dig himself out. Let him have it.
Let him do it.
Well, my social failings in this moment only reinforce my point.
That's true. That is
that I'm not that person.
Yes. Yes, I think that I.
Okay, so your sports really impacted your growing up, et cetera. Huge piece.
Huge piece, but also like I got very into watching sports very early.
Yeah.
That's fun. That's fun. I wish I was more into that. It's like the great American pastime.
It is.
I got really excited about the Super Bowl. That was super fun.
I think this year's Super Bowl, I mean, I don't think, was the most watched Super Bowl of all time. Most watched event since the moon landing.
Wow. What?
By Americans.
By Americans.
World Cup beats it.
Yes. Wow.
I saw that online and I was like, oh, yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
But the World Cup. Think everything's us.
Oh, totally. The World
Taylor
Cup.
Taylor Swift needs to date a professional soccer player.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to.
That would fuck things up.
That'd be crazy. Whoa.
That would be crazy. Whoa.
But there are some
like
pretty.
Shakira's
but then,
ex.
Like Victoria, I mean, the Beckhams did happen,
uh-huh.
And that was pretty nuts when that happened.
Yeah,
but Victoria.
I mean, they're
is
still
not.
massive.
They're still massive. But like, that was the active top player in England, dating a Spice Girl.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
But Taylor's bigger than that now.
Taylor's,
I hate to say it, like I don't think we've seen anything.
Taylor's
like
on
it.
A Taylor's not since the Beatles, in my opinion.
Genuinely.
Has there been somebody like this?
Taylor is better than the Beatles. You're right.
Okay.
Quote me.
Let's talk about other great careers.
What? When did you move into theater from? Because you have a theater background.
So theater was happening simultaneously with sports. And then as sports was becoming, you know, less and less, I was like, all right, I think I'm actually pretty good at this. Mm-hmm. I just loved theater. Like,
which did you like more? If you had your choice then.
Oh, sports.
Yeah.
But I did love theater. And it was I was good. I knew that I was like good at being on stage,
mm-hmm.
and I liked that. And so pretty quickly, like, I mean, by middle school, I was starting to argue with my parents about like, how do I start acting and things. Like, we started fighting pretty early about me wanting to be a professional actor, and that fight never stopped.
It's still going to this day.
Still wow. goes to.
Oh, really?
No, they're over it. They're into it.
Okay.
But it took a while.
Yeah. I'm sure once you started being like, no, I'm able to support myself and like, I'm
sure,
good.
But there's.
I'm very good.
Well, I think
they're. Very, very good.
So very good.
That always helps parents get on board with something when they're like, oh, you're talented.
Yes. But, well, I appreciate that. But also, I mean, it's tough though because it isn't like sports, right? Sports. The best thing about sports is if you're the best in the world at sports. People will find like your talent will speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
When
that's
you're
a really good point,
when
yeah.
you're good at acting,
times are times.
When you're good at acting, it's like sure.
Yeah.
I get like
yeah.
you know it's like
right.
we're all kind of good at it.
Yeah.
And I can also say as someone who's acted with some very, 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 very famous people, there are very famous actors who are terrible actors.
Yeah.
Horrible actors. Bad at acting.
True with comedy, too.
True with stand-ups. There are stand-ups who you're like, you don't really understand how to do this. You've bumbled your way through a career.
Yes.
Through a couple breaks and then the ability to like get by. But like you're not actually that good.
Right. Sales, acting, comedy, socializing in general. Also hitting on people of your preferred gender. These are all a group of things that are very foreign to how I was raised and what I was taught to value in that they're things that if you project that you think you're good at them, people tend to believe you are. And it can, in a lot of cases, your own valuation of yourself is more important than your actual skills. Yes. I hate that I've landed in a career where that is the case because it will drive you fucking
it's
crazy
so
every
true.
Day.
I mean, like the promo and like being able to be confident in something that is objectively subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is so yeah really like it's
totally
that's
so
that
that's,
sucks
because
you always have to if you're smart then you have to wonder
uh-huh
you need to be an idiot
yes
and you won't then you'll be like oh,
which is why some actors are really bad and really good because
yeah.
they're dumb and they just
rocks
and it's like god you just don't question this
yes
yeah.
and that's
there's,
really smart
there's that theory in swimming too that it was like the best swimmers in the world were either dumb as fuck
mm-hmm.
or
smart
like,
as fuck
genius
yeah
genius
yes.
genius
yeah.
And it's because if you have anywhere in between, which is right where I was,
yeah.
you doubt yourself.
I think you're
like,
very
this
smart.
There's a handful of people who are able to really
yes.
like kind of rise above that.
And not to bring up our boy Travis Kelce, but
yes!
one of my favorite things
Again.
About his podcast is when they talk football.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they won't do it too much because particularly this year they've been so aware of the Swifties and they've really tried to like keep football as much as they can out of it.
Sephora. Smart. Isn't Sephora crazy?
Yeah.
But like every now and then, like you'll hear them start talking football and you realize both them how smart they are about football.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Travis Kelce will be like, yeah, well on that play, it's a corner route, but then the safety was in and Jason will be like, well, were they zone? And like, they'll start talking football really fast out of nowhere. And you're like, oh, Travis Kelce's an incredibly knowledgeable athlete.
Yeah.
Just the amount of plays a professional football player has to have memorized in their head is crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Checks at the line, like all these things that they're doing. Patrick Mahomes, like, this is something about, I mean, and I am so sorry to take this podcast here, but Patrick Mahomes Patrick Mahomes' brilliance on the field as far as how smart he is and how many plays he's changing on the line to match the defense's adjustments is like what makes him special. That's what makes Tom Brady the greatest. Is Tom Brady, at a certain point in his career, basically was calling his own plays.
Yeah.
He was just coaching the offense.
That's wild.
That's amazing.
There's a similar.
I guess it is like what they do.
But they're geniuses
and they're like, obsessive people. Yes. They're not cool.
Anybody, I like to think that at the top of any, like at every career, at the top of your ultimate game, most people are geniuses.
I like to hope so.
Right? Yeah. There's maybe like, I'm trying to think of an example of one where maybe UFC, maybe not.
No, those people, UFC they're extremely smart at that stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. There you go. I'm just thinking like they're taking a lot of force to the head.
Yeah, but those guys know like 1,000 submissions, body weight movement. Like they can like that. Those guys are crazy smart.
All right. Well, listen, my point stands. If you think otherwise,
right in.
So theater, you had the ambition right away.
Yes, theater. Yeah. I was like, I want to do this. I think I'm yes.
And you majored it.
So right away, meaning like middle school.
Middle school. I was like, I want to do theater. I want to do comedy.
Can you
like
imagine if I did what I thought I was going to do in middle school, I'd be a marine biologist.
You were a swimmer.
That's true. I got close.
Yeah.
Some would argue.
You are a sea mammal.
Yeah. Not a lot of biology down here. It's all chlorine.
Well, counts.
Yeah.
That's the first step. It's the first word.
All right. Huh. Good point. We both had a journey. But that's amazing that you knew just right away. Yeah, that's awesome. What did you like about it? What were you a fan of?
Attention.
For sure, yeah, it's big.
Like attention. I liked making people laugh, and like I was like, it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly as someone who was struggling socially, I was like, oh, this is a thing I do, and people like me, and I get to be this. I liked that. Particularly as someone who isn't a class clown per se, I was like, oh, this is how I class clown.
Yeah.
So I liked it.
Were you a good student?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like fine. Like I wasn't, my parents will debate this. I wasn't particularly smart, but I was a really good salesman. So I could sell how hard I was working.
Yeah.
Right.
I could sell. Yes. I could sell my papers. I could sell things to teachers. I got a lot of grades that were kind of like, we're going to bump you up because I like you. Like I was a kind of suck up.
But that's like literally how the world works.
I discovered
so
that.
100%.
The best lesson you could have been learning. What are you, fucking exponents? Who cares?
Totally.
In junior year in high school, I realized that if I could go home and do my homework and turn it in, or if I sat after class and just did my homework in front of the teacher, I would get a higher grade.
Yeah.
Same assignment.
Wow. I had no idea this was a
yes.
Oh, yeah. You have to project that you're working hard.
You have to project that you're working hard. You project you're working hard and project like, look, if I'm here, like I was someone who was like, I joke around with teachers, by the way, incredibly unpopular as a result, but I would joke around with teachers. Yeah. I liked talking to teachers. So I was like, I remember like my one math teacher, because she was like, she so wanted me to do well. And I just wasn't great at it, right? So she's like, but you could see like she wanted me to get do well. So I remember like I would turn in papers and I'd be like, let's play a game. She'd be like, oh, what? And I'd be like, let's say you have an allergy to wrong answers. And then she'd be like, hachoo. And I'd be like, I'm running back to my table. And like, I'd usually get like close to hundreds because I would like figure out what I was doing wrong. It was
a good bit.
It was a good bit.
That would totally work on me.
And as a teacher,
you did that
it's like,
also, finance, you would go to jail.
And also, good teacher. It's like, good little bit, but also like as a teacher, like, yeah, I guess I'm allowing him to fix things.
Yeah.
Right.
She never gave me an answer, but she would like, there was stuff like that. There was one a Spanish teacher who just kept passing me because she liked me and I would like try putting effort. And she finally put me in AP Spanish.
Yikes. That's hard because you got to.
And
got
I did
an
like
exam.
A month and I was like, Senor, bro, we got to stop this. Like, I don't know
stuff.
The language. I don't know a thing.
What is this little ruse?
And she was like, no, I'll help you. I was like, we can't do this anymore.
Is this the plot to The Machine?
It was. Oh, was, you on that AP test, though, would have been great.
Oh, my God. I was like,
you cannot do a little
I know. I was
them.
Like, at some point, we're going to have to show people what I know
I'm gonna
here.
I'm going to get a, what is it, one or two
oh
like, on the
God.
Scale?
Oh, my God. It was going to be so embarrassing.
You might not know this about Danny, Laura. His dad wrote a book on sales.
You've told me this.
Oh, okay.
Multiple books.
Laura, you might know this. Danny's, and I read the first chapter.
Danny told me this, so maybe you don't know that I know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That Danny's dad wrote a book on sales. That's
we also
cool.
talk.
Do you,
we do.
What?
We chat.
We've chatted.
Unacceptable. Group chats only.
Okay.
I texted Jess.
I was gonna say, you text my wife all the time.
What?
And I encourage. Jess and I have such a different relationship. We're like, please talk to him.
Oh, God, yeah.
Let him hear the issues.
Yeah, somebody, please just catch your earload for this guy.
But yes, my dad is a sales trainer.
Okay. How do you think that influenced? Does that have some bearing on your abilities in comedy?
It must have.
Definitely is for, I mean, the way I tell jokes, right? The way I tell jokes a lot of times is I am basically selling you on a premise.
You're pitching, yeah.
I pitch a premise, and it's usually unpopular, and then I try to sell you on
yes.
it. Yes. And so I think that's true. I think in general, like,
women shouldn't vote.
And everyone's,
what?
Sell it.
And everyone's like, okay, we're listening. But he, yeah, I mean, like, a little bit. I think the bigger thing is, like, he, you know, it's like, I just should have been a salesman. And I'll always say, like, if I was doing sales, I would be crush. So successful.
Crush.
So good at it.
Crush, yeah.
Crush.
Oh.
He'd be so unhappy.
My last job was, commission-based sales for theater tickets, and I set a record 1 week. No one will ever. I sold like 30 season subscriptions in 1 week.
There
I just like
go.
Wow, could not stop
it's
selling.
It's kind of nice that you have that skill in your back pocket, though, because that's got to be confident.
Oh, totally. I'm always like worst case scenario, we move, and I just go into sales,
go make
and
a
I
fuck
will
ton of money.
Figure it out.
Right.
I will figure out sales.
I'm so
you'd be
jealous.
Fine. You have a couple books you could read. Actually.
I read the Customer Centered Selling by Rob Jalous.
Wow,
and that's the one. That's his like big one. And
that's
bunch.
What we're going to put on the podcast, like, as part of this.
as part of the merch.
Find some random salespeople who are trying to level up their game. They're in this podcast like, this doesn't feel relevant.
Oh, Customer Centered Selling, great book. He wrote also another book called Tales of a Road Warrior that I it's just like stories from being like a road dog like he is. And he did a thing where every trip he went on throughout his entire travel career, he wrote a journal entry. So he'd always write when he, like, going and coming
that's
back.
So smart.
He would write it. So he has this, like, amazing bunch of stories of just, like, things that happened over the years. God. And he made it into a book.
You gotta start doing that.
Yeah.
It's really smart. He's actually told me I need to do it. And I haven't. And, but he has one that's, like, really interesting about, like, but there's one I wrote. I'm a part of the book. Because he, like, brought me with him on a trip. And he was like, you can write
that.
An entry.
That's in the which one?
Tales of a Road
Tales
Warrior.
Tales of a Road Warrior. Okay.
And I think I wrote something like, and with my dad, we're going to Disney, but also some chills, like, blah, blah, blah. I'm so excited. I hope we don't die on this plane.
Can't wait to move some units.
Yeah, I think I said something like, I hope we don't die on this plane, but if we do, I'm with my dad. It was like something like very like weird.
Was he
but
going
like,
to like a kickoff? I feel like every kickoff is in Orlando.
He
the company kickoff.
Yeah, so many of those. I mean, he did so many keynotes back in the day.
A lot of. Orlando is a massive conference town.
Totally. Massive conference town. So I think – and that's, like, a good one because he would, like, try to take us, like, once a year, maybe once every other year. He would take us on, like, me on, like, a trip with him. And it was, like, we'd go. He'd do his, like, for lack of a better word, show.
Mm-hmm.
But then he would also, like, build a day after and it would, like, we'd go someplace.
Ta-da.
And it was, like – I mean, I remember watching it, like, as a kid. I would, like, go and, like, watch him do these – if it was a the quick ones. I just said the word. Just said the word.
Expo.
No.
Wait.
With the
conference.
The quick speech at a conference.
Elevator
keynote.
Pitch.
Keynote.
Oh.
If he was doing a keynote. Thank you. God. I was like, what is? Come on. Just said it.
Brain has it.
If he does a keynote, it's only an hour. So it's like,
yeah.
That's pretty fast.
Oh, no. And they get paid crazy money.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy
no, he does. He did. He did well. Not like crazy well, but he does well. And he's very good in his profession.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of people who grew up with exposure and training to social skills. So I had zero. Your dad.
But I wasn't.
That should be a class.
But I almost.
To be honest.
It's more important.
Absolutely should be a class.
At least one. I didn't need all those math classes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't need
history. I didn't need that much history.
I'll say it. I know too much about dinosaurs.
Right.
Not relevant.
Why do I know that stalactites and stalagmites are different? That is.
I know too much about dinosaurs, and I know very little about dinosaurs.
But mm-hmm.
But I need it 0% of the time. Yeah. I've never needed
it. Also, how sick would the Natural History Museum be if you didn't know about dinosaurs?
Like, what the fuck are these?
Hold on. What is this animal?
Yeah, instead of us all being like...
So what artist came up with these?
Yeah.
Real.
These really existed?
Yeah, that'd be... I'd be hyped as an adult to learn about them in my free time.
Sure.
Yeah, you should learn taxes time. In middle school, and then shit starts to get good.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Flip it around.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Start with the tedium.
Yeah.
Volcanoes?
Newtonian physics, second grade.
There's like six places that need to know about volcanoes. Yeah. Otherwise, optional.
Yeah, I hate it. I was bad at middle school science because it was just like cumulonimbus versus Sirius. And I'm like,
they just really learned the clouds for a really long time.
Dude, for no reason.
Why? Who cares?
Keep it moving.
And then you actually start to do like labs and like equations and like testing your results and like pushing race cars down tracks and seeing how much time they take.
Yeah. How does a credit card work though? Let's do that, maybe.
Half this country is destroyed by credit cards.
Yes, because this is where it actually, that's exponential growth. And that's the thing that very few people know. And I really, there's like three things that I think people should know in math before they graduate high school. One is exponential growth, how it works, and that is what leads to credit card debt growing exponentially. And then I think normal distributions and standard deviations, looking at how things can scatter from an average. That's it.
God.
Yeah.
I wish I understood some of those words. But
I think you do.
I understood most of them.
Yeah. But those are, that would be good. I don't think we need.
Now, I guess my question would be, I'll tell you where I got hung up.
Yeah?
I'll tell you where it happened. Why are credit cards exponential and not interest?
Interest is exponential growth. Interest is an exponent.
Doesn't exponential go up?
It just repeats the phrase and it goes.
Let's say if 6 point
consistent and exponential goes like this. Yes,
so when you accumulate interest after the end of a term and you've held debt, then that interest grows more to interest unless you pay it off, right? So then that's going to continue to grow, and then that'll grow, and then that'll grow. So it's like $100, then $107, then $100. Whatever.
Good example is 10%. After 1 year, $1 turns into $100. 10%. After 1 year, that's 110. But then if you grow 10% on that, it's 121.
Got it. Thank you.
It's not a linear. It's not 10, 10, 10, 10.
Got it.
Like you said, interest on the interest, that's exponential growth.
Got it. Thank you.
And that is Einstein referred to that as the most powerful force in the universe. This is a guy who theorized black holes. He was being a bit coy.
He's kind of it, is it? Yeah. He's not incorrect. An exponential problem is the biggest type of problem you can have.
No. Factorial is worse. And then titration, there's levels well beyond exponential. But exponential,
I mean, as far as life goes, but
as far as life goes, yeah.
Like any problem where I'm like, this problem needs to be solved right. Like it's the same, like the thing I always said this to every comic, and I stand by this to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
I've said many comics, if your car gets towed and you can't pay to get it out, I will pay for your car to get out.
Mm-hmm.
I will try to get it. Because you don't want that thing sitting in there.
No, money now.
Whatever paycheck you're waiting for, that is get it out.
Emergency loan.
Yes.
Steal.
Get it out of there. You'll never get that car back.
Yeah.
If you let it sit for more than a day.
Do they sell those at a certain point?
Yes. What's... At a certain point, you go upside down in the car.
Yeah. Underwater is the term, right?
The towing company
was upside down.
Able to sell that car.
At a certain point, the car is not worth as much as you owe.
Right. But then the towing company just takes
I'm sure they just fucking they just laugh at you and
crooks.
Yeah. Oh, you know what they do with the underwater's for houses. They sell a lot of times when debt collectors come after you, let's say you owe $1,000, the debt collectors they'll sell it to a debt collector that say, "Hey, we'll buy that for like $100." And we'll track them down and get the money ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning we might not get the money, but there's like 10% chance that if 1 in 10 people we track down, then we can start to profit.
Yes.
It's wild.
That's also why with a lot of debt, if you go – if you're up to the point where you have a debt collector, if you can be like, I'll give you $500, they're usually going to be like, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because that's a profit for us.
Yeah. Strike a deal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sell them.
Yeah. Eugene
sales.
Yep.
Merman
back to your
did
dad.
It.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Back to your life.
Yeah. Sorry, I went off.
We could do this, Eugene Merman.
Eugene Merman, it's just worth Googling Eugene Merman debt collector thing where he just took out, he owed money and he tried to make a deal with them and they refused. So he spent exactly how much money he owed them on like a full page ad in a newspaper, just calling them out for not taking the money, even though the original, just being a total dick.
God,
he's so funny.
He used to be so good at those.
Yeah.
That was like one of his best bits is him fighting with companies.
Yes. Your father. Well, let's get to. I mean, you went
so
to.
Yeah.
NYU for theater, and you also, but a practical man, a practical Jew. You also did,
You're
I think, political science was your also your double major?
Yes, but this wasn't my call. This was my parents' call.
Understandable.
My parents did not want me to be a theater major. We go back to the not on board for this. So they were like, you will not major in theater. And I was like, well, what if I double major? Then.
That's a great idea.
I was like, that seems like a fair compromise.
Yeah.
So they were like, fine. So then I was able to audition for theater, which was huge because the thing my parents didn't understand that I understood was that because I'd already at that point like started to see that like I was pretty good and I was getting went to Governor School in Virginia, which is a free summer camp paid for by the government.
Wow, that's cool.
For like for like kids who are good at shit.
Wow.
And so I was in theater
for
there. So I was like, well, so
do they take adults?
Yeah, do they take?
yes, it's a CBS showcase. but like.
Laura, I'm gay now. Sorry. I got to have something.
You got to get in that CBS showcase. Yeah. But they like.
What is CBS?
Diversity Showcase.
Oh,
CBS.
No, CBS.
CBS, yeah. Okay.
You were correct.
Okay, you were correct. I heard CBS you were Pharmacy, and I go, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, CBS.
I'll let that ride.
The CBS Showcase is always like a little like. They're just paying for a bunch of comics to do some stuff. And I'm like, cool. That seems nice. Anyway, the point is, so I realized that they would, like, these schools, like, my chances of going to NYU off my grades was about 0%. My chances of going there with a theater audition went up significantly if I had a really good audition. You can really, like, put yourself in a separate category.
Yeah.
That's what I did. So I went there. I got into University of Pittsburgh Early Action. And I remember being like, I'd be fine with that. Really, that's in my mind, I was like, I'm totally fine with going to University of Pittsburgh. Like, that's a big enough city for me to do comedy in. That's what I'm actually doing. So, not done my parents, but I'm like.
You knew stand-up? You already knew you were going to do stand-up?
Well, kind
of. Yeah, when did that shift happen?
So that shift.
We jumped middle school to, like, college, so somewhere between.
Well, I always was like, I want to do stand-up. And I had fucked with it a little bit in high school. I'd gone up a couple times. But I was like terrible, and I'm in high school. I mean, it was a joke.
Yeah.
And in Virginia, was like, what are we doing? So like horrible environments to be in. This place called what was it called? It was in a Best Western hotel at the basement.
I've done two shows in the last 2 months that were comedy clubs in Best Westerns.
Yeah. The Best Westerns love a comedy club in the basement.
Dude, it's a great business model. That was a high school performance at a Best Western.
Yes, I started doing it there.
Did you lose your comedy virginity?
I did.
To that Best Western?
That was the first time
I lost my real virginity at Best Western. No,
I lost my comedy virginity first. I lost my real virginity. Am I right? But true.
Did you really?
Yeah, I didn't lose my virginity until I was in college. What are you, nuts? Have you listened to anything I've said about myself?
He only spoke to teachers.
Yeah, what are we talking about here?
Well, you went to NYU, so you lost it in group sex, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Oh. Orgy, that was
Let me tell you, it was quite the shift.
I bet.
Yeah.
To go from Virginia public school... That type of sexual education and being a virgin loser to we roll around naked with each other here. I remember being like, this is a lot.
Yeah,
I bet.
Everyone's touching all
big
the time.
Big jump.
Honestly, as a woman who lives in New York for a long time now, what you just described still sounds like a lot.
Yes.
It's a lot.
That's a lot for anyone.
Not in my...
sex is bad to sex is required.
Kind of.
Yeah.
There was a ETW, which was one of the theater wings, did a thing where you would like – it was like a – not requirement. You didn't have to do it, but they were like – it's a night where like you all get naked with each other and spend the night at ETW naked. And it's like, I guess to make you feel more comfortable with your body or whatever, but I was like, that's insane.
Some creep came up with that idea.
It
was crazy.
And they sold the shit out of it. They were like, how do I get
I think very recently someone in NYU was like, what are we doing? And they like stopped it.
Can I just say my department in college, whole school, I think it had 40 students, two were women. Wouldn't have been as fun.
No, that would have been
if the applied math it had.
We were probably
a naked night.
Well, we were 50-50 probably, but obviously a high gay guy population.
Sure. Oh, that's who came.
Which also was
that must have been a party.
Which also was a very big adjustment for me. And it really been around LGBT.
Openly gay, yeah.
Certainly openly. I'd never been around I never really been around openly gay people until summer camps. I would see it like the theater camps.
Theater camp. When did you start going to theater camp?
High school. High school, I really started being able to be like, I want to go to these. Yeah. And so I started very specifically going to theater camps.
How hard was it academically to carry both those workloads? Because Tisch by itself is that's a backbreaker. Musical theater?
Regular theater, but I did musical theater in it. So it was like, so they have Cap 21, which is like the musical theater wing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I auditioned, remember you, I auditioned with songs.
Mm-hmm.
I did Fiddler on the Roof, Miracle of Miracles,
mm-hmm.
and I did Joseph the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Jew.
So very Jew heavy. And I did Brighton Beach Memoirs was one of my monologues.
Not familiar.
And then great play. OG starring Matthew Broderick. And then another monologue, which I can't remember. But it was like, the lady was like, do you want to go into the musical theater wing? And I was like, I know I can't dance at that level. I've never done dance in my life until I went to NYU. So I ended up being in Strasbourg. I studied the method.
Mm-hmm.
But I also did singing and dancing while there. But I was not specifically the musical theater department.
And all the time were you... Oh, so that, and then you were doing a poli-sci.
Poli-sci. So, but basically the way
were
to do
you
it
tired?
Was... Like, yeah, I was so tired. Yeah, it was really hard. It was really hard.
Really
it was
candid.
Really hard. My parents and I, but I will say, like, very early, I was like, I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
This is going to be really tough. And basically, but the way to do it... I mean, with that said, I went into my guidance counselor's office my freshman year, and I said, I have to double major. I don't give a flying fuck what this other major is. I'm never using it.
Yeah, pick the easiest one.
What is genuinely the easiest one? Yeah. And he was like, political science.
Really?
Has the most crossover. And I said, great.
I had crossover.
Crossover credits.
Off? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
no,
yeah.
So,
Were there a lot of athletes?
NYU?
Yeah, right. Technically D1?
Yeah,
right?
we have facilities.
We have a D3 basketball team. We had a fencing team is really good. That was our one sport that was good. Never went to it. Obviously a game. I don't even know what they do. Never went to it. But then yes, I studied, so that's what I studied.
It's called a quirl. I just made that up.
Sounded right.
It's called a fencing quirl.
You say it, I believe it.
Yeah.
And so, let me tell you, every Olympics I let myself get into fencing for a hot second.
That's great.
And I'll always say
they need the support.
It always seems to me like they're doing nothing.
Yeah, it's summer curling.
It's a lot of ta-ta, blah, and then they both just go like this, and then somebody's light turns on, and they go, bah! Huge reactions every time.
Yeah.
I should start watching. That sounds fun.
It's every time it's like two of these, and then they both just inevitably at some point just stab each other.
Yeah.
And then it's just who stabbed the other one first, and it's by like a second, and then they both yell immediately. Tons of yelling.
I briefly was being recruited to do pentathlon, which is five different sports.
Ooh.
Some of them aren't really even sports, right?
It's a weird thing.
What are
they?
In
the Olympics. Oh, God. I knew you were going to ask this. Horseback riding is one of them.
Ooh.
Swimming.
Okay.
I think it's like shooting, I think was one
Bow
of them.
Bow and arrow or shooting.
Like
with a gun.
Oh, is this the one where you like go down a
fencing.
Path and you do each of these?
Run, swim, horse.
Yeah, thinks yes.
Run, swim, horse, gun.
Fence. One of them.
Oh.
That was the fifth. I'm gonna look this up real quick.
Well, yeah.
Hey Siri, what's a pentathlon?
I feel like those are all sports.
Hey Siri,
that.
What makes up a pentathlon? This bitch didn't. Even
I feel like they're all five sports that one guy was gambling on at one time. I was like, let's put them all together so I can consolidate my debts.
I'm trying to make some money here.
Yeah.
I'm making money a little bit faster.
It's, yeah, swimming, fencing, equestrian show jumping, pistol shooting, and cross country running.
Yeah.
And
is that not six?
That's five. I think I just, a lot of them were two.
You listed horses. The horse things sounded similar.
Is one. That's one. That sounded like, got it.
Not horse racing, horse jumping.
Jumping, yeah, which is harder. So
got it.
I already knew how to ride horses, and I was a good swimmer and running, whatever. So I was at the Olympic Training Center, and they briefly were trying to train me to fence because they were like, you could be really good at pentathlon.
Did you?
I did a couple of lessons. Then I realized, like, I don't want to do this.
Mm.
I was like, wait, hold on. I don't want to.
Sure.
Yeah, that would suck.
Swimming.
The rest of your life, telling people you're world-class athlete, and then explaining what the sport is to every single person.
Yeah.
It's like when you have a weird name that's hard to spell, and you have to spell it to
this
everyone.
This is where the Danny is like,
I don't know. That sounds pretty cool to me. Yeah. I would do it in a second. Like, no one ever recruited me for nothing. It sounds pretty awesome, but all right, don't do it.
Well, lifeguard as well.
Swimming is the hardest one to train because swimming takes so long to learn how to go fast.
Totally.
You're just not meant to do that.
Yes.
But
I never,
fencing, you can do a couple. Even if you lose, it doesn't matter because the other ones are good.
I never really knew how to – like, I can, like, survive swim, but
that's
I can't,
good.
Like, swim,
really
swim.
All you need,
yeah, yeah.
To be honest.
I think about doing Survivor a lot. That's still something I'm always like, maybe someday.
I got recruited to do that too.
Really?
Yes.
Why didn't you do it?
My mom wouldn't sign the disclosure, so I got disqualified because of that.
Wow.
I know. Would have been crazy. I would have been good.
So fun.
Your friend did.
My friend did. My best friend did it.
Who?
Elizabeth Beisel.
She got
a lot of heat during it too.
Oh, is she the one who?
Yeah.
Oh. Off mic. We'll talk about this.
I'll say this on mic. You want to talk about not knowing the full story?
Oh,
that was a great
was bold,
one of those things
shit.
Where I'm like, oh, yeah, when you actually hear from the source, that is not what it sounded like.
Guys, I don't know. Maybe we should start a Patreon or something because you're sure as shit not getting this story on this
podcast. Yeah, big scandal.
Yeah, you got to pay for that one.
Hey, what a Survivor story.
Go read all the lies online if you want to hear more.
yeah. The point is, I've never been recruited for anything in my life. And I think it's very cool.
To do this podcast.
That's very nice.
So,
athletically.
So what took you so long? Okay, good college
Why
degree.
Why did you fuck around with theater so much before getting into stand-up?
Yeah.
Well, so I get to New York, and I'm like, I'm going to do stand-up as well as do theater.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the political science, almost impossible to do. But also, stand-up was very mean. It was a mean world. I would go to these open mics.
Yeah.
It's just like such
Creek in the Cave days.
Think about such a shift from pre-Creek in the Cave.
Oh.
So think of a shift. Creek in the Cave is when I started.
Mm-hmm.
Think about like the shift from theater teaching where it's like we're a team and we're all growing together and like the obnoxious feel-goodiness of theater. And to then go, now go to a comedy club open mic.
Yeah.
And I just was like, this isn't the world for me. So instead I went UCB and I did all UCB. I did improv. I did all that stuff. And then I was like, I'm going to be in
its heyday.
Oh, I was there when it was hot.
That's awesome.
And
that must have been fun.
Really fun to be a part of. And I was an intern and like I was in Hammercats and I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do sketch and improv and I'm going to be an actor. And I was, you know, I felt really good at acting.
Which you are.
And
so
then,
that was correct.
And then, you know, I kind of, and I've told my origin story before, but I always think it's a fun story. My origin story is I started graduating and I was like, okay, I know how to act. I'm ready to act. I'm ready to audition. I know it's going to be tough, but I'm ready to audition. And I very quickly realized, oh, you can't. You can't audition. Auditioning isn't a thing in Hollywood. You don't get to audition. Getting to audition is impossible.
Yeah.
If you don't have connections, and I don't have connections.
That's the game.
And you watch these kids around me, and I'm going, oh, the kids who have connections are starting to get opportunities or come from a lot of wealth.
Why is Bobby Lee Jones getting all these auditions and I'm not?
But like you, and you start seeing it, and you're like, oh, and I very, and so I started doing pay-to-play auditions because I was like, okay, like, let me try to play. And that was going nowhere.
Sure.
And I was like, this is, I'm never going to make it as an actor because they, not because I'm not good or whatever, just because like no one will even see me. I can't audition for anything. And so I was going through that realization that everything I'd worked for basically was like useless at this stage because you can't act. So what's the point? What's the point of any of this?
Right.
And then right as I'm graduating college, my friend Lindsay, who I'm seeing later tonight, she had a friend.
Shout out to Lindsay.
And Lindsay's friend, whose name I do
Shout
forget.
Shout out to Lindsay's friend.
Sorry to say. Name is forgotten. They were like, hey, this guy's filming a special at NYU's theater. And there's like a ton of, they're looking for people to go. Do you want to go? He's filming a special. And I was like, whatever. I was like, who is it? And they were like, he was in 40-Year-Old Virgin. And I was like,
done.
All right, whatever. And it was Kevin Hart. It was Kevin Hart's first special. And I sat third row for Kevin Hart's first special.
I know that.
And I was
this
like,
this is a good story.
And
good
I was
story.
Like, this is undeniable. What's
That's
happening
awesome.
On this stage is undeniable. I didn't know it'd be this level undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, this dude's in his 30s. I think he claims he wasn't. He was. And, but I was like, this is undeniable. What's happening on this stage is an undeniable talent.
Yeah.
And I just was like, that's a way around the system. The way around the system is you can get really good at this thing and then I'll audition. And that was
so
it.
You
and
can
I
get yourself your own accolades.
You can sell yourself.
And basically the next day I quit improv completely, kept doing sketch, basically gave up on auditions, mm-hmm. and just went all in on stand up. And that was it. It was
That's
all
amazing.
It's all Kevin Hart.
What is it like? I'm sorry. What is it like quitting improv? They're like, no, your money.
I know they were
you
like,
a few more thousand
what?
From you.
No,
you're but. You're one level away. Mm-hmm. You are one level away from meeting Zinta, and
yeah, Zinu.
Yeah, from meeting Ben Schwartz.
From
and
your
then, and then Matt Walsh will teach.
What
you.
Do you call it? What's the fucking Scientology scans?
It was like, yeah, they were pretty devastated. But yeah, that's how I got into stand up, and Thanks. Then I went all in.
I've never asked you this, Laura. Was there a performance where you're like that like hit you at your core? Where like I have to do that one day.
I didn't see live stand up for a really, really, really long time. Mm-hmm. I listened to ripped stuff online mostly. That's why
you and me both.
That's what I was like completely in love with, mm-hmm. and that was like. I don't know. I think I was listening to, I think it was like Kathleen Madigan or something mm-hmm. like that. Oh. I remember distinctly I was mowing the lawn, listening to like her. It was, I had my freaking MP3 player, the tracks.
Sure.
You know, the ones, it's like the old school where you do like the little clicker. And I was listening to them. I was mowing the lawn and I was just like, what if I could do that? And then I was like, oh, that's not human beings doing that. So impossible.
It's impossible. Yeah. I mean, I remember like, I'm always like, listen, we all can claim George Carlin was your biggest influence. And I think for some people, maybe that's true. George Carlin's amazing. I have obviously loved George Carlin. When I was a kid, though, as far as what actually led to me getting here, Dane Cook.
Oh, and of course.
Brian Regan.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who were big. Those are the ones that got to me. Brian Regan got to me. I just remember being like, this guy.
Also,
this
we
is.
The
also,
perfect
the show,
age.
The show Last Comic Standing.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That show was so big for
Which
me.
Which season?
The first season.
Who was on it?
How big of a fan are you, really?
No, because I want to figure out. I'm sorry,
Dad,
I want to figure
so
out who was my season.
So, Dad Fan is our winner.
Oh, that's right. And Ralphie. Dane?
Well, no, Ralphie was not on the first season. Ralphie was on season two. Dane was never on it. But Rich Voss.
Wow.
Dave Mordell. Kathleen Madigan, I believe, is on season one, speaking of. And then the one who I fell in love with, Gary Goldman.
Yeah.
Gary Goldman was on season one of Last Comic Standing, and I was like, this guy is funny.
This guy gets it.
This guy is what funny is. And I loved him. And now I'm like friendly with him. And I have to always pretend I wasn't. I have to always pretend when I talk to Gary Goldman that I didn't write him an email when I was in high school.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
He's
I
up
would
there.
Freak out if I met Kathleen Madigan.
Yeah.
I know. I've never met her, and I'm always like, because she's so funny.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
She's so, so funny.
And I love that she's having a moment now. Like,
I'm
I feel
so
like
happy
she's finally having her moment.
She deserves it.
It's
Kathleen,
a long game.
Come
God.
To the pod.
It's a
I
long
would
game.
Die. Oh, my God. I'd be so excited.
Kathleen Madigan, come on the pod.
Come on. Yeah. Come on.
I won't be here. But come on the pod. But it would mean a lot to her.
So, your first set.
First set,
as
not
an
excluding.
Adult.
Yeah, it's like, so I'm fucking around with it all through college, like a little bit. I would do it a couple times, you know.
Open mics? Or some like NYU?
NYU shows, a couple open mics, but like once or twice a month, which is like, as we all know, the best way to be bad at stand-up comedy.
Yes.
And then Kevin Hart happened, and I went every night. Every Aww. Night now, I'm going every night. And I started doing every night. And then pretty quickly, you know, you start seeing that growth of every night, where mm-hmm. all of a sudden now you're growing exponentially, and now I'm finding my community, and you know I'm meeting Josh and Kevin and my group, and I'm starting to like, you know, do all that and
Rabinowitz,
yeah,
Barnett, yeah,
and like starting to meet my people, and then from there it all took off, and then like, you know, I remember starting to get I had this bathroom story that was really good and a couple things, but then like, you know, also I remember I mean you just like. But then also, I you know, starting in New York was stupid, so I had a lot of, like, people who saw me too early, and I'll always, like, be mad about that.
Yeah,
too
happens.
Many people saw me too early.
I think
sucks.
A lot of people need to just kind of realize, like, people get better over time.
And I think that now those people have, but, like, you know, there's a manager unnamed who I had a conversation
Patreon.
With a couple years ago on Patreon, who, like, a couple years ago was like, I fucked up with you.
Aww.
And I was like... But I also was like, yeah, you did. And it was stupid. Like, what are we doing? You know how this works.
Yep.
You judged me off of college. Like, you didn't see I was working hard. Why wouldn't you judge me off how hard I'm working?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly then. Now it's like, I get it. It's numbers. Who even cares if you're good? But it's like, back then, it was like, it was about that.
Right. Right, right, right.
We have the opposite story.
Well, yeah, you.
Yeah, well, I was in Houston.
But you were in Houston. Completely undercover. Smart.
Yeah, I didn't know what I wasn't smart. It was just where I happened to be.
Yeah, I started in New York City like an idiot.
I still managed to make a fool of myself.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, you're right. I think it is kind of a fucking disaster because you also have no confidence.
You have no confidence.
When I go to other cities, I'm like, oh, I'm not that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You get to build a 10 or 15 that you like. And then, like, look, you're still at the end of the day, you're going to go to New York and get smashed.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. You're going to go to New York or LA and you're going to get beat up a little bit.
Yep.
Like, even happened to you a little bit. Like, career wise, you were doing well, but, like, I remember you coming to LA and being like, okay. All right.
Ow.
We're dealing with some.
Oh, I have to do open mics.
Yeah.
I thought I graduated from this.
Yeah. No, we're good. These guys are good. Nope. And. Yep.
Back
and,
to the drawing board.
Yeah.
Back
and,
to the writing board.
And monsters.
So it's
and
like, the, absolute you know, monsters. You get to skip that. Like, I always felt like I never really got that because I just started being beat up. So it never affected me.
Danny, out the gate when the pandemic, I was on shows I had no business being on with, like, people like you. Yeah. Like, I was 4 months in.
Yeah.
It was egregious. Yeah. It was egregious.
But it's
I probably will never recover my reputation from all that. I've inched my way.
Yeah, but we were performing under a tree and on a lawn, so no one was really killing.
Sure, so it was hard to tell who's doing anything.
Yeah.
Thank God for that tree and lawn.
But yeah, I mean, look, when I was starting in New York, like, I ran my own show and I had, like, crazy big comics on it, and I would be like, that's how they'll always know me, is like the shitty little guy who hosted it.
Totally.
Well, and I like to think, which is true, a lot of them just forget.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, for sure. More and it's also cool to see when you're, oh, wow, look at that guy turned the corner. So something I know about your history is you brought up the bullying earlier. Was there a culture of bullying more then than now?
Yes. Yes.
Name names.
I will name names.
Actually, there is one person I know.
No, I will not name names.
We can name
obviously.
Him.
No, I will not name him.
Because
he's grown
trend.
As a person.
Nope.
There's
I will not name.
There's a growing trend in
bully the bully. Like,
comedy podcasts of people just calling each other out. Have you noticed that?
No.
Oh.
Have you noticed that, though?
And Laura, it's the absolute worst thing happening in our industry right now.
It's you've noticed this, too, though,
worst,
right?
Worst? Like, are you sure?
It's I'd rather have somebody do a bunch of crowd work than go on a podcast and be like, I'll tell you what I have a problem with.
Is this also the cat?
Shut up. Shut up.
Did Cat start this?
No, Cat's continued it, and it's probably the biggest one. But no, the amount of people who get into comedy for the drama is ludicrous.
Yep.
It's constant drama in this industry.
Yeah.
For no fucking reason.
Yep.
It doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
It's all the same people constantly fighting with each other. Oh, but this person's mad at this one, and because their Reddit thread said this and that, and they shouldn't have said this, and he'll no longer go on his podcast because he won't talk to him.
Oh.
Everybody shut up.
There's a whole podcast channel about
Oh,
it.
My God. Everybody shut
this
up
like
and just do shows.
Kind of things, right?
The Rogan Sphere, but there's other. Then there's the cats, and there's the, all these things.
I would like you to start sending me these podcasts.
Oh, I'll send you a ton.
As much as I don't think this is good or healthy, it is also super interesting.
Well, and that's the
I
problem,
love it.
Right?
Because it's like reality TV.
It's you reality TV, like, and I wish it wasn't my industry. Because I'm also like, but I do shows with these people, and I wish, first off, nobody seems to be fighting in person. I never see it backstage.
Never.
It's all this backtrack. It's all these cowardly
cowards.
Behind. I'll tell you who I don't like. And then they go 2 weeks later, I got to respond to one man.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're all in the same city. Just call each other.
Yeah.
You'll know each other.
You're doing jokes. Like, it's not that
serious. One of you is bringing up the other at the store.
Yeah.
Politicians.
Yeah.
Like, cool it.
I'm a big believer in internal memos.
Yeah.
Like, there's things where it's like, as a Jew, there's like, I'll see another Jewish person saying, doing something. I'm like, that's wrong, but I can't say that around non-Jews.
Yeah.
That behavior needs to be corrected without other people outside of us and giving it as fodder to them to criticize us in a way they haven't earned. I mean, with comedy, they haven't earned. You don't have the right to call out that joke if you haven't braved this,
Listen,
in my opinion.
If somebody's doing something terrible,
right?
Like, and it happens to you.
Important
note.
Someone
if it happened
you.
To you, I don't like when somebody does it on behalf of others.
Yeah.
It has to be the person that it happened to has to be the one to go, I want this out there. Then, great. We should be talking about that. And it probably should go public. Yeah. Other than that, call each other. Talk to each other.
Totally.
Communication.
I've talked to people. I've had issues. Of course, we interact with 700 people, some of whom, I believe, a very small minority, but some in comedy, are psychopaths.
Yep.
Yeah.
We deal with some very difficult humans on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's a weird group.
I call them, and I go, what are you doing? And they'll go, oh, sorry, I did. And I said, yeah, you did do this. Did you show yesterday? You did this thing to me. Why'd you do that? They go, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I go, oh, no big deal. But let's not do it. And we figure it out.
Yeah, you're going to be a good dad.
I don't go on a podcast. Yeah.
That's a good approach. I think that's a really nice thing to do. You know, actually, it's also like courageous, which is a bold word for it. But like, you know,
I'm
not scared of confrontation.
I'm not scared of confrontation. Listen, I've done stand up long enough now. And I think when you do stand up long enough, you get to a place where you're like, we do such scary situations. I've been in such ludicrous, scary situations in my lifetime at this point, right? Like, we all have. Like, we've been in rooms if someone wants to get in stand up, particularly women, I'm always like,
oh, I've had, oh yeah.
Yeah, here's the really cool part about stand-up comedy. There's no barrier to entry. Right? Yeah. That's why I got into this in the first place.
There's a really bad part about it.
Because Kevin Hart, guy and I went, there's no barrier to entry there. I don't have to know someone. Oh my God, anyone can do this art form. That's amazing. And the bad news is there's no bad barrier to entry.
Recently, in the New York scene, there was a guy who shot a guy on the subway.
Yep.
Stand-up comic.
Yep, you knew him.
And he was on the run from the cops. I knew him.
Yep. Craziest part, I didn't even know that story. Yeah. I'm learning it right now. So what was the bullying like? How was that experience for you? What was the culture like back then?
It's just mean. It was very like.
Was it roast battle kind of related stuff?
No, because it was more cowardly. It was a lot more just like back talking and just not. It was like that thing of like you go up in an. I remember one time going up at New York Comedy Club, and they put me last.
Mm-hmm.
Their draw.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I was last. It's like crazy. Yeah. Last 2 days ago. And I go up, and there's four people in the room,
mm-hmm.
and they all got up and left. And I remember being on stage going, there's literally nobody in the room.
Comics.
Yes.
No, yeah, okay.
Like, I just was alone in the room.
Yeah, that's wild.
And I was like,
"So what?
We can stop this, I guess. Like, I don't have to talk to my, I could have done this at home." And shit like that. I remember 50 worst jokes or whatever. Like, I did that one time ever, and like, there's a panel, and I went up, and they were like, I'll never forget this. Somebody was like, everybody, because you're supposed to do your worst joke. That's the premise. And I went up, and I did my worst joke of the last year. Didn't go over great, because it was my worst joke. And one of them goes like, yeah, well, Danny's only here because he runs a good show. And I was like, let me sit that on mic.
People are so surprised.
On mic into a – and I just was like –
Did that get a laugh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. And I went –
It's a shocking statement.
Oh, actually, I remember it kind of got like an ooh. It was like, ooh.
Huh.
Right, that's good.
That's too far. Like,
I'm glad that didn't get it.
Did you
– But no one like came to my aid. I mean, it was just like an ooh from the crowd kind of being like, that obviously wasn't even funny. All that just had to hurt his feelings.
Totally. Also, you're probably not getting booked.
Yeah.
Mr. Panel Man.
You moved to L.A. after that. If I recall correctly.
Pretty soon. I mean, it came down to it at a certain point. I was like, I felt like I was good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was not great, but I was like, I got 10 to 15. I think I can go to a new city, start over, figure this shit out. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I was like, you know, I really think that I can go there and act. And acting's going to be a big way. I think can make money, and now I have a little bit of a calling card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm starting to get some meetings. Still went to LA, got unrepped, but I'm starting to get meetings. People were kind of meeting me, and I was like, all right. And I went to LA and started over, and that was like much better, and you know, kind of immediately.
That's good.
Was it because of the fact that you had some like base level skill to start with?
I had some base level skill. I think I was more ready. I think that there was, you know, I don't know. I'll never, because I also, listen, my career has been filled with some rough breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd already been through a couple at that point. But more were to follow. And LA has been filled with a litany of just like insane, this has never happened to anyone else.
Can we hear about one of them? Or we don't have to.
Oh, we can hear about.
I think
it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know a lot of them. Like, which one do you want me to tell?
I think it's important also to like kind of you know, because
he was runner up to date Taylor Swift before Travis Kelce.
One, someone listening might be going through. Someone listening might maybe Laura Sogart.
Sure.
You know, so I think it's like good to hear. Like everyone goes through this.
Everyone goes through it. I mean, there's Coca-Cola. That's a classic. There's, it's still real. I mean, it's like.
They put the logo over your face. Was it some crazy shit
Coca-Cola,
like that?
I got cast. This is like, I first came out to L.A. This is when I just came out. So this is like a good when I just came out story, right? First out to L.A. I'm feeling, you know, pretty good. I go in for my first commercial audition. Mm-hmm. After finally getting a commercial agent. Big deal. And it's for Coca-Cola. I go in. I get a call like that day. They're like, they want you to come back. Mm-hmm. I come back. A lot of people in the room.
Huh.
Like, and I was like, dude, big deal. And then they cast me as this. They're going to do AHH.com through 20 H's. And there was going to be a scientist who led you through them. And it was this like brand new marketing campaign. It was a big deal. We filmed one massive commercial, three small commercials. And I am the scientist. I do it. I take a photo with this stupid little monkey that afterwards I can show this to you, what I'm about to tell you. But they take a photo with this little monkey and they're like, it's a big deal. And I think I do pretty good. And like, I was very excited and they built this factory for me. It was unbelievable. And, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And I was like, okay, I'm set. I'm staying on Rami's couch at the time. I'm like,
yeah,
great. I literally moved out like that day. I was like, done, baby. We got money. Like we're good. And, I see articles online. They're contacting me a lot because they're like, you know, it's coming, blah, blah. But then, like, I'm seeing articles online being like, Coca-Cola's gearing up for this big campaign.
Okay.
So hell I'm yeah. like, this is unbelievable. I'm cast. I filmed it. It can't go wrong. And then I start hearing nothing. Still seeing the articles, but I'm not hearing anything anymore. And I'm like, that seems bad. And then I follow Coca-Cola on Facebook. And I remember I see them being like, meet the new Coca-Cola scientist. And I click on the commercial, and the commercial is my commercial, and it is me walking, doing the lines.
Okay.
But my human body is there, but then my face is covered with a cartoon polar bear face, and my arms are covered with cartoon polar bear arms. But my body, my human body, still intact. So I know no it's.
I shouldn't be laughing.
No, it's insane. That's it's insane.
So funny.
It's utterly insane.
Wait, the check cleared though.
It sure didn't, because I'm no longer recognizable. Stopped getting paid immediately. I no longer get paid.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah.
Wait. So did you get some portion of the money?
I got the first check when they first. I got one check.
Did you have lines?
Do we have a lawsuit?
We don't. We did do some like, are they allowed to do that?
Right.
And they were like, yeah, they're allowed to do it.
Wow.
They're not obligated to put you in the commercial and you're not recognizable. It's my body.
But you were still there and filmed it. And that is like literally it still is your body.
It's a wonderful day in Alien.
Wow. You need your face. The big thing in commercials is your face. If you get cut out of a commercial, if they were like, we cut you out, you have to find your face. If you can find even in the background of a shot, you find your face. You can go, I'm recognizable. If you see the back of your head, it's not recognizable. Wow. So for me, fully over my face.
That's why they did it.
Oh, fully.
Boycott Coca-Cola. They're done.
It's crazy.
Boycott polar bears. Anyway.
So that way
I'm going to start spraying aerosol cans.
So that I would call
it. Expedite their death.
That I would call a bad break.
That is a bad break.
there's a lot of those.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of those.
It's a wonderful day in Dandyland.
I mean, we don't have to go through.
I did a.
I don't want to like send you into
fairly
a spiral.
Recently. No, I mean, it's like.
That one's pretty funny, though.
At
so
some
thank
point
you for sharing.
At some point, it will fix. At some point, this will all work itself out. Mm-hmm. I won't say the name of this show, but this happened like a year or two ago. You remember this? Mm-hmm. I auditioned for this TV show, one of the leads. I get called back, and it's during tapes time. I send in a banger second tape. I go way above and beyond. Mm-hmm. I make this tape that's like, I kind of did a take on the tape. I like did one of those, and they go, we want to, like, we're going to test you. And I go in for my test, and it's the creators of the show and a couple producers, big group. Zoom. I mean, I felt great. I feel like I had a really good one. Cried after I got off of Zoom. Because I was like, I was like, I've worked so hard and I did exist. Because I had one time for, I'll say the TV show Dave, I got to do it with Lil Dicky. They called me into audition with him after my first audition. It was really exciting. And I choked. I choked really hard in that audition. And I knew it. I walked out and I was like, they're not going to cast me, and they're right.
Yeah.
I didn't fucking do it. And this was probably, and this one, I didn't do that. I fucking delivered exactly what I wanted to do. I was funny. I was quick. Any improvs they threw at me, I was good to go. I fucking nailed it. So proud of myself. And I get a call from my reps, and they're like, yeah, I mean, like, they definitely said it went really well. And, like, we're also just going to be honest with you. Like, we can't figure out who you're against. Like, we've asked around, and, like, no one else is auditioning for this role. So, you know, we're feeling pretty good.
Sure.
And then I don't hear anything for another day. I don't hear anything for another day. My reps are like, you know, they're still. And then they go.
It was a polar bear. It was another polar bear.
I know. I literally, in my mind, I was like, if they fucking polar bear me. but they were like, and then they were like, you didn't get it. And I was like, who got it?
Who could possibly?
Who got it? Like, who was I against? And they were like, you're not going to like this. I was like, all right. One of the creators.
That's fair enough.
And I just fully showed him how to do the character.
Yeah.
I just taught him how the character should
be. Yeah, that's an annoying thing. They just take your moves.
That sucks.
And I was like, why? Yeah. Why would you do that to me?
Well, because he wanted to know how to do the character.
I mean, I just was like,
I know why. Hold on, Danny, I know why.
I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, is that loud? Are you allowed to just fully make me do an audition with clearly no intent to cast me? I'm on dates, clearly. You're the correct. What are we doing?
Right. My God.
So one debate you and I have a lot is you stand up for L.A. comedy. You're one of the few people who doesn't hate L.A. open mics.
Mm-hmm.
You think they're valuable. Absolutely. Think there's a skill set there that all comics should learn.
Mm-hmm.
Every
comic should marry.
And you even have some criticisms of the New York scene that I think are valid.
Every comic should marry. It's not that I have criticisms of L.A. too. Mm-hmm. I think every comic should shoot to marry, if we were to do the stereotypes, marry L.A. and New York.
Yes.
That makes
sense.
To
marry it. You should be writing really tight, and you should sell your jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? L.A., if we were to do a stereotype, no, all sell, no material.
Yeah.
Can be true. I think it's a little unfair, but can be true. That's definitely the stereotype. New York, I go, it's all material, no sell.
Mm-hmm.
Very little sell. And I would throw in New York in particular right now. A lot of crowd work here. You guys are loving crowd work.
Yeah, it is annoying.
You guys are
going pretty dirty.
All
here
in on dirty crowd. Not in the way you guys are doing it.
Damn.
You guys are really committing to crowd work here.
Yeah.
In a way that I'm like, it's like, I've done a couple of shows here where I've been like, I think I'm the first person who's going to just do material.
Damn.
Like, what are we doing? Everybody, back it up.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that, but I also think that we'd probably do different types of shows. So
totally. I've just noticed it by my...
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I've seen the clips, so you're not wrong. The crowd work is happening.
Yes. I find it to be really happening here a lot. I find it way less. And I'm like, definitely some. But, it's all material, no sell. You know, people just standing, reciting jokes.
Yes.
You don't, because you were in L.A., and you did learn to marry it.
You learned, you have some pretty good running around stage.
You do stuff.
I try to, and you've encouraged, two things you've encouraged me to is be passionate about whatever your premise is, and then sell it beyond the words. Find gestures, find actions, find noises and faces.
Yeah, you're allowed to be a person up there. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to sell your jokes, and it doesn't take away the writing.
No.
So I always think everyone should marry the two, but I'm very much like, L.A. has its fault, but so does New York. And at the end of the day, I can show you L.A. comics that I think are incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I can show you New York comics who are unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the best comics working right now, Bill Burr's, for example, marry the two. You know, Boston background, L.A., and you see it now. He is one of the best sellers of jokes in the business, in my opinion. Yeah. I could write an essay about his mic work. And also just like, great, obviously incredible joke writer, but like tight, but like incredible salesmanship. I love that stuff.
It's so fun.
Final question.
Well, we didn't really talk about, I think we focused too much on the negatives. Danny, you've had a lot of successes
as
well.
Yes, I have.
So I think we should
one of my most accomplished actor friends. Yeah. And one of my genuinely. And probably my favorite person to watch. It's cool watching you in film. I'm like, God, that's I know that guy, and I can't even register that's the person I know because he's so in that character.
Yeah.
You steal every scene you're in. Just a real brilliant comedic actor, like in that kind of like Jim Carrey kind of style where you can, there's no such thing as too much.
Yes,
and, but you can back. Also you can dial it back, but like you can go to the ceiling and keep it a real believable character.
I think right now where I'm at career-wise, unfortunately, like fortunately and unfortunately, like I have to go so big with my auditions because mm-hmm. I'm still in that world. Unfortunately, my career is just still in that world where like I got to make a tape and I still have to figure out a way to get around the people who are connected.
Yeah.
Unless I'm the one who's connected, in which case I don't. But if I have to be the one who like gets around it, it's like
totally.
I do some big tapes. And as a result,
yeah,
a lot of times swing. I get cast when I'm like, well, I took a swing in the tape, so we're going to have to swing on set.
You and David Ebert both.
Yes. But yes, I love acting. I've gotten to do some really cool stuff.
You're also in a funny situation where we talk about comedy and, you know, how hard of a time this is right now for comics to market themselves against people who are basically just marketers who happen to do stand-up. And we always kind of come back to you being like, well, at least I have this this acting day job thing to keep me afloat.
But I would say, like, for me in particular, it's commercials. Like, commercials debatably has been my day job.
Rami.
And Rami.
Crazy X.
Yeah. But those aren't commercials have been Ted knock on wood.
Consistent. Like,
yeah.
Check him out on Ted right now.
Ted right now, which I'm like very
stealing
proud
every
of.
Scene.
Very
yeah.
proud of Ted.
And then you've done some really interesting like, you know,
oh yeah,
things in the stand-up world too. Like I would say,
you're special.
Revolutionary is probably a dramatic word for it, but like the choose your own adventure.
Definitely
special.
Odd.
Yeah.
definitely doing doing something
iconic. Yeah. You're special. Yeah, I think this is
this is
there's
a podcast
nothing like it.
Where people would appreciate hearing about doing something interesting like that.
Yeah.
You did a choose your own adventure special.
Yes.
Where you can choose how the jokes go.
Yes.
Which stance to take
mm-hmm.
on every subject.
Yep.
One against or for.
Yep.
And shot it with don't tell. And it went on YouTube where like you could literally pick.
Yep, you pick, you go through version. It. You go through it, it's a special that gets to be just for you.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
It's so cool. I'm so proud of it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Be.
I think it was an impossible task that we pulled off beautifully.
Yeah.
I am so proud of it.
How
I will.
The fuck did you do that?
So when did you realize you were too good for regular stand-up?
It was really, I mean, you know, you knew this because you knew when I started talking about it because I was like, I had this idea and then it was like, and I had the closer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I know what it can build to. And I got a closer. And I just got to build to that. And then I did the first three. Were like so fast, like I just like was like, what's the reverse of this joke? And so quickly I was like,
yeah,
easy. And then the back three took me a year. I mean, I couldn't fucking do it. It was so hard.
I mean,
but once I got there, it was so exciting. And yeah, it was a really cool writing exercise. Like
yeah.
I that's where I kind of looked at a certain point. It was like trying to reverse your premises. How do you reverse a premise? How do you defend something you don't believe? And then, like, a lot of times finding actually a truth to it.
Yeah.
Like, something I do kind of believe.
And how do you run that?
And
how do you test every joke?
Well, that was what was so fun. I remember, like, the best was when I would open for, like, every now and then someone would let me open for them. And I would do, like, if we had two shows a night, I would do 30 one way, 30 the other way.
Yeah.
Did that fuck them up? Were they just, like,
the waiters would always be, like, because you can tell they weren't really paying attention, so they were like, in the first one, because you were talking about David Blaine.
Do I have a brain tumor?
Yeah, like you could see them like trying to figure out what had happened in their head.
Questioning reality.
Yeah, we weren't, because like, they're not paying attention, but then you could just feel them being like, but
it's subconsciously they're hearing it, for sure.
I know you do this for some, you know, artistic purposes. You want to do something that bends the format. It also happens to be really great marketing because everyone's putting out a special, and these really break the mold.
Yes, I think that part's a little bit more of there's a success and fail to that special, right? The
mm-hmm.
success is, I think it is like a beautiful piece of art, and I believe its day will come.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I believe that there will come a day where people find that special, and they will go, oh, this is really something cool. Not even that, like, it's great, whatever, good, bad, you know, everyone will have their opinion on it, but, like, this is really cool. I think it came out in a really disappointing time mm-hmm. in comedy, and it just wasn't the right time for it.
Yeah.
And it died as a result of that. I would argue, actually, the whole premise of the finale of the special, which, spoiler alert, if you're going to watch it, don't listen to this, which was, don't believe anything I say. The internet is so easy to manipulate. Mm. The fact that that special has been viewed by millions and millions of people through reels, where they believe they just see one side of the joke, and they argue and debate it and go, or this guy's speaking for me, and don't even realize it's part of a special, that the whole premise was, don't believe anything I'm saying here.
What a fun Easter egg, though.
Is just devastating. It's devastating to me. And I'll never get past it. It's like, oh, it's fully failed. The whole proved its point to an even greater degree.
Because on TikTok, you could stitch it. You could stitch yourself.
It's so hard.
You just play them both at the same time.
Do that. Yeah, that's good.
And you're working on something different right now as well. Uh-huh. A time capsule.
Working on a bigger premise right now. I won't go into too many details on.
We'll have you back to dive.
But I am doing another, I think, cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out.
Okay.
The world.
Hell yeah.
But like I love this art form, and I think like this is what your podcast is about. So it's like, I love stand up comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm obsessed with it. And I think that like this art form, in my opinion, is going through a very interesting time where we are both booming and regressing
mm-hmm.
a little bit at the same time. Like things that we would have called bad 3 years ago, we all just are like, that's not kind of lame.
Yeah.
Are succeeding.
Yeah.
And
bubblegum pop.
Yeah. And it's like, but then I also think more people are watching stamps than ever. So I'm like, okay, that's good. I mm-hmm. like that.
Brings more people out.
Yeah. I just like, I'm hoping that at some point, I'm always like, I just want to be someone who's at least trying to do what stand up in my mind should be.
Well, that was beautiful.
What's your definition of making it?
That's a great question.
What if you were like crushing it on reels? That beautiful.
Yeah.
70,000 followers on Facebook. Yeah.
Doing a crowd work special. If I could just get one of those out. What is making it? I think to me, making it is comfortable income.
Mm-hmm. Incorrect. You know? Oh, you got the question wrong. Sorry.
Damn it.
Okay. Comfortable income.
Comfortable income. From there, the levels of that are, you know, exciting, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, once you go, and this is the beauty of commercials, is like, if I land a national commercial and starts to air, it allows me to make that special. Right? That special is made on the backs of
Subway
and Pepsi and these commercials I've done and corporate gigs. The shitty work I have to do to allow me to make these specials
mm-hmm.
and to make things that I believe in, to make the special I'm making currently, right? Just burning money. Mm-hmm. Burning money.
Throwing in the trash.
Absolutely throwing money in the trash. It's a nightmare. You couldn't write up a worse business model than the way I go about doing specials. Make it as complicated as possible. Refuse to work with a company that doesn't want to actually work with you. Like, you couldn't, it's like, do it with, don't tell who, like, does everything they can to cut the cost. But at the end of the day, like, it's coming out of my pocket. Like, and they are an amazing company who are running the world. I feel like at this point it's become lame to even talk them up because it's like, obviously don't tell
someone.
Yeah, it's like, once upon a time, this was like cool. Once upon a time, this was like a cool thing to say. Like, where I was like, I'm telling you, this company's, but now I'm like, hey, everybody knows. And I go, man, if I could be a series regular on a show.
Yeah.
All that now. I don't have to worry about income anymore. Not just what I find that incredibly artistically fulfilling, but now I can do with stand-up what I've always wanted
to do.
That's
cool,
yeah. I'm not worried about ticket sales anymore. Ticket sales now, take it, leave it, because I have this thing.
Right.
Yeah. Or ticket sales are so great, acting now becomes a thing where I don't have to take any acting.
You don't have to be a polar bear.
I don't have to do, those things. I would do it, like...
This is, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool because I have such... Like, there's a company called World War VII that does commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this and don't make any time. I'll do commercials with that company till the day I die.
They're
just really nice.
That's awesome.
They're a really nice company. And I just think like that company, I'm like, yeah, I'll just work with you guys because I like you. But like, other than that, I'm like, yeah, I won't do commercials anymore. I won't have to do them. I'll get to just do what I want to do. So to me, comfortable income means I can now create whatever I want, and it gives me the artistic freedom to do that, and that seems lovely.
Yeah. The irony that I've seen in my life is I had a day job, and I was doing comedy at night, and then now I'm at the point where, like, oh, if I just had something I could do during the day that would make me enough money that I could do comedy on my own terms.
I think about it all the time.
Yeah. Full circle. Or I'm like, it's the in-between. This, like, early on when you're day jobbing, that's kind of the best time, and if you ever get to that point where you have, like, you know,
I think about it all the time because, like, the theater place I used to work closed, and I think, but it was part-time sales, and I was like, sweet, and it was gig all over the phone, and I was like,
you could definitely,
Laura, you have it so easy. Laura, you have it.
Yeah, you guys are dealing with the devil there, but
I know it was. It's, I don't really think I could do it, but I'm like, man,
grass is always greener. That's
grass is always greener.
Canonical grass is always greener.
Totally.
So. Yeah. Anyway. Right. Danny, where can people find you?
Yo, we're doing plugs. Three plugs. Yep. Three plugs every time. You can follow me on Instagram. All the things. But Instagram, I feel like, is the best. Facebook. Danny, J-O-L-L-E-S. It's very important you follow us. It's a bummer, but, like, it is the
you
best way.
It's
the best
follow
way to support us.
If you need to.
Follow. Man,
no,
that actually can hurt you. That actually can hurt you in the algorithm.
Oh my god!
But
that's why I'm
hungry. Both of us. But it's the fact that we both know that immediately is upsetting. The both of us are like, actually, I don't want to do that.
I'm gonna post on Tuesdays.
Gotta post around noon, either coast. Follow me is, like, huge. So please do that. It means a lot. Secondly, I have a special called You Choose on YouTube. I would love it if you watched it. I think it's really great. You choose your own adventure. I also have a special called Six Parts on YouTube. That one's really fun, too. And I think they're both worth watching. Third thing, and most importantly, kind of a waste of time on your guys' podcast, but for the sake of argument, I will do it because this is what I say on every podcast that I do. Stand-up comedy is like hockey. It is fun to watch on TV. It is a different experience in person. It is just a live art form. Don't worry about seeing me live. Don't worry about seeing any of us live. It's great if you do. But just find your local comedy club, look up the comics, make sure they have 10 minutes uninterrupted online that you can actually watch, and then go see them live. Go see live stand-up comedy. It'll be the best time of your life. You will fall in love. You will love this art form. Go see live stand-up.
Well, I'm sold. Let's go see a hockey game. Thanks so much, Danny.
Bye. Thanks for being there.